A century and a half ago, government surveyors explored the unmapped wilderness of the American West. Few places stopped them. But in the northwestern corner of Arizona, Lieutenant Joseph Ives encountered the deep, steep, and narrow gorges of the Colorado River. He wrote this to Congress in 1861.
"It looks like the gates of hell. It seems intended by nature that the Colorado River, along the greater portion of its lonely and majestic way, shall be forever unvisited and undisturbed."
The Colorado River canyons weren't even named, let alone explored. They engendered fear of monster whitewater smashing boats to splinters, of whirlpools sucking boats to unknown depths, of slow and lonely deaths trapped by impassable waterfalls and unclimbable cliffs. Barely 8 years passed before someone was brave enough or fool enough to set out to do it. Major John Wesley Powell wrote this on August 13, 1869, as he approached the last big blank on frontier maps.
"We are ready to start our way down the great unknown. We are 3/4 of a mile in the depths of the earth, and the great river shrinks into insignificance as it dashes its angry waves against the walls and cliffs that rise to the world above. We have an unknown distance yet to run, an unknown river to explore. What falls there are, we know not. What rocks beset the channel, we know not. What walls rise over the river, we know not."
Tomorrow marks a century since Powell's death, 30 years after 2 pioneering trips down the gorges he named Grand Canyon. He returned with one of the nation's greatest stories of science, adventure, and survival, then or since. He was a national hero and still is to some, including these fifth graders in a classroom in Flagstaff, Arizona, where Powell's Feet inspires history lessons and games.
"Heads up. Here they go. What are you doing?"
"Scouting."
"Scouting."
Okay. School children and their teachers pretend to scout rapids and navigate rocks by moving popsicle stick boats around a game board.
You scouted, but you didn't see that big rock. Smacked that oar against it. Broke that oar.
These kids have learned this basic story about John Wesley Powell.
He had one arm because it was shot off by a bullet or something in the Civil War, in the Battle of Shiloh.
Yeah, and he was a geologist.
He was the first white man to raft down the Grand Canyon.
When the group would make camp, he was always climbing rocks and making maps of where they were and the different kinds of rocks.
That story is attracting more attention than ever. In the last 2 years, at least 8 new and reprinted books have appeared, each exploring Powell's history. Some assert a lesser-known legacy, still resonant today. Powell led the nation's irrigation and geological surveys and tried to assess the natural limits of the settlement of the West.
The second half of Powell's professional life was about inventorying the resources of the Western United States. It was not about running rivers, it was about measuring them.
Historian William Dubuis stands along a broad but shallow stretch of the Rio Grande near Embuto, New Mexico. The river's flow is down to a whisper, quieted by drought, as it snakes past Russian olive, cottonwoods, and slopes of juniper and sage. Powell established a river gauge station here in 1889, the first of its kind in the nation. And it's still here in the form of a wooden rowboat and a cable stretched taut across the river. An army of water engineers trained here before fanning out across the West.
The very term runoff, the term acre foot, these are inventions of Powell and his people in these early efforts to figure out how to assess how much water we have in the West.
Runoff describes the flow of water out of the mountains during rain or spring snowmelt. An acre foot is water a foot deep on an acre of land, enough for a family of 4 for a year. Both concepts are critical to life in the arid West, a region of perpetual drought. Powell knew there wasn't enough rain here to sustain the kind of family farms common back east. That didn't stop speculators or Congress from enticing settlers westward with homesteads too big to water and farm.
It was a bitter double cross on those hopeful people, and Powell saw that. And he argued vehemently against the continuation of that kind of nasty charade. He kept seeing again and again that we needed to have ways to bring people together and to manage resources collectively.
that ran completely counter to what we're told, at least, was a driving force of the settlement of the West, which was individualism.
Well, that's right. I remember listening to Vine Deloria, a great historian of the Sioux, say, if you guys had been such rugged individualists, we'd have shot you one by one coming over the ridge. This country couldn't have been settled without large-scale collective effort. And that's something Powell saw very, very early on. At heart, Powell was a populist. He believed in participation of the broadest range of people, and he believed firmly in the collective wisdom that that kind of democracy might produce.
Dubuis chronicles that effort in his new collection of Powell's writings called Seeing Things Whole. He describes Powell's obsessive attempts to stop Western expansion in its dusty tracks. Powell wanted time to assess the water supply and the natural limits to settling on the land. He wanted to rearrange Western boundaries, setting up government by watershed. He envisioned local committees of competing interests, including ranchers, farmers, loggers, miners, and townspeople. They and they alone would decide how land, forests, and water would be used.
He believed it was the role of government to hire and train the experts who could come to the West, inventory the resources, set up the laws and the framework and so forth within which settlement could take place, and then get out of the way and let the people go forward. And that's where he became pretty cross-threaded with a lot of the Western settlement development booster interests. They said, just get out of the way. There's money to be made out here. We want to go make it.
It must have been like trying to stop a flash flood with a cork. Powell was hounded out of Washington. His health began to fail. He gave up the fight and retired.
His life had the arc of heroism. It had also the arc of tragedy, because once he knew what he believed should be done, he never faltered from advocating that. He rose to great heights of power and influence, and then just as dramatically fell suddenly and was finished.
Why is it that these ideas resonate today? You know, why do you keep going back to the writings of a guy who some people probably considered a lunatic at the time for having the audacity to suggest these kinds of controls over Western lands?
Probably the most fundamental reason is that the settlement of the West is still going on. We're still settling both the lands of the West and the issues that attend our use of them. Anybody who reads a Western newspaper knows that there are arguments continuously over the use of forest lands, over grazing on public lands, over apportionment of water. We have a huge agenda of unfinished business, and we're still trying to work our way through it. And Powell had penetrating and insightful ideas about just about every item on the agenda. That's why we need to keep looking at what he said.
There were some successes, including the establishment of irrigation and grazing districts in the West, but the nation wasn't quite ready for Powell's holistic view. There's a famous photograph of John Wesley Powell sitting at a desk piled with papers. His right hand grips a pen, his left sleeve rests empty on the desk. Above his long, scraggly beard, and beneath thick eyebrows slightly raised, are piercing eyes, a fixed and determined stare. Powell will never know it, but his most controversial ideas still have life at this hot springs in New Mexico. It's inside the nation's newest national preserve, 90,000 acres of meadows, forests, and mountains. It's a vast ranch the government bought 2 years ago. The feds are now getting out of the way, turning the place over to a board of trustees, locals mostly. It's an unprecedented experiment in public lands management that might make John Wesley Powell smile. More on that tomorrow on NPR's Morning Edition. And there's more about John Wesley Powell at npr.org. Our look back at John Wesley Powell was produced by Cindy Carpian.